In Miami-Dade, voting for the first time in 60 years for a new sheriff in town. In Broward, maybe voting an old sheriff out. In Palm Beach, probably keeping an old one in. Welcome to the South Florida Roundup. I'm your host, Tim Padgett. In the next hour, our WLRN team will preview this Tuesday's primary election for South Florida. And we've got a lot more than sheriffs to talk about. In Miami-Dade County, we're voting on a mayor and, oh yeah, Joe Carollo's gym equipment. In Broward County, Sheriff Gregory Tony faces real competition, and most of the embattled school board seats are up for grabs, too. And in Palm Beach County, there's a race to replace the first Haitian-American commissioner. All that coming up right after the news. I'm Tim Padgett. Welcome to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. Bienvenidos, bienveni, bienvindo. It's been 58 years since Miami-Dade County had an elected sheriff. Next week, voters here will, for the first time in six decades, start the process of selecting a new one in Tuesday's primary election. But while the final vote for sheriff will come in November's general election, the race for Miami-Dade County mayor will be decided in next week's primary. So will other important questions, such as whether a controversial new fire station will go up in Miami Beach. And so will questions such as whether Miami City Commissioner Joe Carollo can keep his controversial gym equipment in Maurice A. Furay Park. On today's program, WLRN reporters will help our South Florida voters get some perspective on primary election issues like these, not just in Miami-Dade, but also Broward, Palm Beach, and Monroe counties. This is the start to what promises to be an electric 2024 election cycle. What are your chief questions or concerns about Tuesday's primary? Call us at 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. Joining me now in the studio to look at the Miami-Dade edition of The Vote is WLRN's Veronica Saragovia, who watches Miami Beach, WLRN investigative reporter Danny Rivero, who watches Miami-Dade government and politics, and WLRN's government and accountability reporter Joshua Ceballos, who keeps an eye on Miami, also known as the Magic City. Do they still call it that, Josh?
Occasionally.
Yeah, okay. How are you guys doing?
Great.
Very good. Thanks. Hanging in there.
All right, let's get to it. Starting with the history that's being made in this Miami-Dade election, the first sheriff's election since the year I was born, 1962. Danny,
yeah. Congratulations.
Yes, that's how old I am, Veronica.
Thanks for volunteering.
Yeah. Danny Rivero, remind us why the county hasn't had an elected sheriff in almost 60 years.
The short end of it is widespread corruption. I mean, last time...
In Miami-Dade County?
The last time there was an elected sheriff here, it was it became a major scandal. The office... there was a grand jury report. They unveiled that there was widespread systemic, you know, protection of illegal gambling houses, taking hush money from brothels, shaking down what were then illegal abortion providers for protection money, kind of just running a whole racket from top to bottom in the county. Voters found out about it. They were really angry, and they voted to abolish the sheriff's office, and from then on...
In 1966,
and from then on, we've had an appointed, you know, director of police.
Right. So why now is the county having to elect a sheriff again, 58 years later?
Yeah, so in 2018, there was a statewide ballot amendment that was really like four questions in one, which was controversial on its own. But one of the questions was, you know, should every county have all these elected offices?
Yeah.
And there was a couple of them, but in Miami-Dade County, we were the only one in the state that didn't have an elected sheriff, so we're going to have to elect a sheriff. And also, as a result of that, there's a, you know, elected tax collector and supervisor of elections office coming up too.
Why did voters in 2018 say, you know, we want every county in Florida to have an elected sheriff? Why was that so important?
There's not a lot of reason to believe they really understood, to be honest, what they were voting on, because there were three other questions on the ballot,
right.
And they were all bunched together. It was yes to all or no to all, And as one person put it in Broward County, you know, it was, this question was sandwiched in between motherhood and apple pie. It was like, how could you not vote for it? And it passed.
Yeah. All right. So, okay, to say that the field of candidates for Miami-Dade Sheriff is crowded in this upcoming election would be an understatement. We've got no fewer than 11 running for the Republican nomination. We've got 4 on the Democratic side. Briefly run down for us, Danny, who the favorites are, and I'm referencing your reporting here. Tell us if those favorites actually reside in Miami-Dade County.
Right. There is just a lot of names to go through, so I can't get through all the names.
Oh, no, I'm not asking you to, but who should we be watching?
Candidates. Yeah. The biggest ticket ones, I suppose, is on the Democratic side. I'll start there because there's fewer. James Reyes is highly expected to make the second round of the general election. He served a few decades in Broward County doing different kinds of operations. He oversaw the jail system there, mm-hmm. came down to Miami-Dade, oversaw the jail system here. We got out from under federal scrutiny and a consent decree with him leading that charge, and now he's the chief public safety officer for the county, kind of overseeing
mm-hmm. right.
the fire department, the jails, and the police department. And you know, he's been endorsed by you know, incumbent mayor Daniela Levine Cava. He's right. broadly expected to make the second round. On the Republican side, there's that's where a lot of the real battle is happening. You have Rosanna Cordero Stutz, Rosie Cordero Stutz, who's been endorsed by President Trump.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It you know, remains to be seen how effective that is in the Republican primary. She's served several decades in the county's police department in various roles. And I'll mention Cordero Stutz and James Reyes, who I just mentioned, yeah. both live in Broward County.
Right. And that's been a sticking point in the discussion of this race.
It's a little funny. We could have a race in November that's two Broward people vying to run the sheriff's office in Miami-Dade, but it is legal.
Yeah.
And the other big name that I should mention mm-hmm. Is Joe Sanchez on the Republican side.
Okay.
Former city of Miami commissioner, Florida Highway Patrol officer. He has a lot of kind of institutional backing.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of his political connections are donating to his campaign. He does have a lot of name recognition. And I talked to him just a week or two ago, and he's very confident he's going to make the second round.
All right. Veronica Zaragovia, I want to turn to Miami Beach. From sheriffs to firefighters, let's say. I think a lot of Miami-Dade voters who've done early voting, like me, were a bit confused to see a question on the ballot asking whether a new fire station should be built in Flamingo Park on Alton Road. And I say confused because our first thought was, shouldn't this be something Miami Beach residents decide by themselves? Why is a voter like me, say down in Palmetto Bay, being asked to weigh in on this too? Can you explain this for us?
Sure, Tim. This actually predates your birthday to 1956.
I'm glad something does.
When Miami-Dade County adopted its Home Rule Amendment to the Florida State Constitution, and in 57 it adopted its Home Rule Charter, so that lays out the rules by which the county operates. Mm-hmm. And Article 7 requires a majority voter approval when there's going to be a permanent structure built in a park. Right. And that's where we are with this
in
issue.
In a county park.
Yes. Well, yes, but mm-hmm. No, it could be city too.
Oh, it could be city too. Okay.
I mean,
right.
This property is owned by the city.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there are some exceptions for some cities, but this one is included in this. So that's why this is on the ballot and you're voting on it, even though you don't
because
live in
it. Because of what you just explained, it becomes a county issue and not just a municipal issue. Okay. That's important to know. So why is the site for Miami Beach's fire station number one, or the new one that's being proposed? Why is the site controversial?
To understand that, we have to go back to this has been going on, this issue of finding a new place for a fire station in Miami, in the South Beach area, for almost 10 years. And some years ago, they found, they decided the city on a almost 1 acre property on 6th Street where there's a structure called the South Shore Community Center. Mm-hmm. And it was designed by a very esteemed and historic architect, Morris Lapidus.
Right.
Right. And he designed the Fountain Blue and the Eden Rock and the Lincoln Road Mall. And this was originally a senior center. And then now it's used as a child daycare center. 41 children use it for either.
So it's a historic
site.
And they didn't want to tear that down.
Well, so, preservationists made a big uproar about it. And now the reason it's controversial is that this will cost some $20 million more because they have to move the track to the east if they were to fit it, the fire station on this western edge of the track park area along Alton Road, and also that it will delay the amount of time for the firefighters to have a new station, and they really need one.
Right. But a lot of folks, including the Miami Herald editorial board, say the fire station needs to be built, and this is the best option, they say. Let's listen to Virgil Fernandez, the former Miami Beach fire chief who favors it.
You know, I can tell you that from the very beginning, we have tried to look for a location that causes the least amount of pain, but at the same time meets the demands and the future needs of our city and our current needs of the firefighters, of the men and women that respond out of that fire station.
So, Veronica, does the measure look likely to pass?
Yes, it does look likely to pass, but it's a straw vote. It's a non-binding issue. So what commissioners have agreed is that they're going to look at how South Beach voters are going to vote on this.
Right.
And so depending on that, if there's a majority support, then they're going to move forward with the park.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
They'll be able to sort of detect how the people who are actually going to be most affected by this are voting, even though it's a countywide issue.
Votes are irrelevant.
Yeah.
Actually, yes.
That's good to know. In this case, in specifically this case.
But so, you should still vote. It's important.
Well, speaking of straw poll measures, Josh Ceballos, there's another question on the Miami-Dade primary ballot that's actually, again, a non-binding straw ballot question. But it's one I think is pretty important. And it asks voters in Miami-Dade County if the county needs to expand its rapid mass transit system. Public transit is, of course, a critical issue in Miami-Dade and the butt of jokes because public transit is widely considered laughable here compared to other U.S. metropolises. Why is this question on next Tuesday's Miami-Dade ballot then?
Yeah, so everybody in Miami-Dade knows that transit is an issue. This referendum, the straw ballot question, is championed by Miami-Dade Board of County Commissioners Chairman Oliver Gilbert III. He said he wanted to take the temperature on public opinion for expanding mass rapid transit, which means like metro rail, metro mover, light rail, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to take the temperature. I think there's some perception that, I mean, it's already a thing that everybody knows that people want more of this. People have been saying for many years and voting that they want more mass rapid transit. We're behind the times. But I think this is sort of a measure so that the county can have data to point to in future votes and say, hey, this many people in the county say we need more of this, or like 100%, 90% of voters say we need more, we should be putting more money
in.
So
if I can add just one thing.
Sure.
There are a couple projects that are pretty ready to go. The funding is ready to be released, hundreds of millions of dollars. And this is kind of an effort to say, okay, we got the final stamp of approval before we do that. But the county is pretty ready to pull the trigger on some projects.
Right. So this just gives them that backing. Right,
exactly.
This is the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tim Padgett. I'm talking with WLRN's Veronica Zaragovia, Danny Rivero, and Joshua Ceballos about the Miami-Dade edition of next Tuesday's primary election, when we'll vote for a new sheriff for the first time in 60 years, whether to keep Mayor Daniela Levine-Cava in office, and whether to let Joe Carollo keep his gym equipment. Mm-hmm. We'll explain that in a second. Call us at 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. So, Danny Rivero, is there much suspense speaking of the Miami-Dade County Mayor election, is there much suspense in that nonpartisan election? Does the incumbent, Mayor Daniela Levine-Cava, who is nominally a Democrat, look to have the election sewn up? And as your reporting seems to suggest, is the only suspense here which Republican will come in second?
There is suspense. Anything can happen in elections.
Sure.
But the incumbent current mayor, Daniela Levine-Cava, is heavily favored to make the second round at minimum. And, you know, according to some polling and some hopes on people with people on her side, if she crosses the 50% next Tuesday, she could win it outright.
Yeah.
The big battle that I've spent some time reporting on is who's going for the number two slot. There's two very different brands of Republicans and conservatives, even though, you know, this is a nonpartisan election, but they're both kind of competing for the number
and
two
slot. And I should correct what I said earlier. It could be decided if one of the candidates gets more than 50%.
Right.
If no candidate gets more than 50%, then we move to a second round in November.
Exactly. Right. And the two main candidates that that look potentially like they could advance is Manny Cid. He's the mayor of Miami Lakes. He's calling for, you know, slashing taxes, you know, doing away with a lot of the programming that the current mayor has done on affordable housing.
Right. I know that's one of the sticking points.
He wants to take all of that money and put it towards home ownership programs and whatnot. That's his, you know, one of his main planks is lowering taxes and housing. And on the other side, you have Cuban-American influencer Alex Otaola. You know, very well known in the Cuban community, especially. He hosts three shows a day. A lot of people watch him. Out of any candidate, he's the one that clearly has the most grassroots support. He has way more donations, individuals actually donating to his campaign than anyone else.
But seems to have kind of just a one note agenda, which is I'm going to throw out all the communists in Miami-Dade County.
He wants to throw out all the communists. He wants to create commissions to investigate communists, shut down communist businesses.
Right.
You know, however you feel about what that agenda is, that resonates with a lot of people, and there are a lot of people supporting him. We just don't know if it's enough.
But again,
get him to the second round.
But again, the Democrat, Laveen Kaba, is clearly the front runner. And you and I were discussing earlier why the Republicans didn't invest more effort and money to recapture the Miami-Dade mayor's office, particularly when they appear to have the momentum in Miami-Dade when it comes to factors like voter registration, and especially its growing appeal with the county's majority Cuban and Latino electorate. So why not challenge Laveen Kaba harder this time around if you're the Republican Party here?
You know, a short answer is, it's hard to run against an incumbent.
Yeah.
You know, if it was an open seat, they would probably try harder. And I know there is a lot of, you know, Governor DeSantis won Miami-Dade County 2 years ago. And there's been a lot of talk of we're going to make Miami-Dade red. It is a little bit hard to understand on some way that they're hoping a majority of the county votes for President Trump when they're not really investing a lot up front for running someone in the mayor seat. But it is very difficult to run against an incumbent.
Nope, you're right. Veronica Zaragovia, turning back to Miami Beach, even though this technically won't appear on next Tuesday's primary ballot, I think we have to discuss the, quote, ghost in the room, as it were, meaning the ghost candidacy of the aunt of one of the Democrats running for the District 106 State House seat currently held by Republican Fabian Basabe. Her name is Mo Sanders, but now a judge has ordered her to run as Mo Saunders Scott. Excuse me, Saunders, not Sanders. She'll apparently be on the ballot in November as an independent, but how has she already shaken up this important state house race in Miami Beach?
Well, Tim, her legal name is Maureen Saunders Scott. So for one, going by Mo is just one letter different.
I've come to know her as Aunt Mo. Yeah.
So, so that is one reason. Also, Florida House District 106 includes Miami Beach, Sunny Isles, Bay Harbor Islands. She lives in St. Johns County, which is about 300 miles away south of Jacksonville. And so it's like a 5-hour drive and doesn't really have the issues that we have down here. And so there's a concern that with her name being so similar to her nephew's, it's a story of an estrangement, you know, family drama, and they're worried that she's going to siphon votes away from him.
And I should mention, this has become a big issue around the state. The whole ghost candidate phenomenon has become very controversial. Josh Ceballos, let's now turn to the Miami ballot issue we've all been waiting to discuss here. Miami City Commissioner Joe Carollo's gym equipment. tell us why this is an actual Miami ballot referendum question on Tuesday.
I'll try and go quickly. Basically, Joe Carollo is the chairman of the Bayfront Park Trust. It's semi-autonomous, although it's a government entity. It's in charge of Bayfront Park and Maurice A. Ferre Park. Mm-hmm. As chairman, he pushed to create this gym equipment in the park that does not fit the park's master plan. And there was really no like kind of public input on this. They went and did it with a contractor that he knew. And so neighbors in the area that use it, that use the park, were upset and they appealed it. And the Planning and Zoning Appeals Board said, yeah, this does not fit the master plan for Maurice A. Ferre Park. You should get rid of it. And the commission voted to agree with that and said, yes, let's get rid of it. But then on the day that Damian Pardo, the commissioner for that district, was out on vacation, Joe Carollo said, oh, let's put this on the ballot. And then they voted in favor.
Gosh,
and
now, that's not Joe's style, is it?
Well,
and now our votes do matter.
And now everybody in the county has to vote if they get to keep that equipment there. But there's been a lawsuit saying that this ballot item is misleading because it doesn't mention that the Planning and Zoning Appeals Board said this doesn't fit the master plan, that it's not appropriate. Plus, I think the address on the ballot question does not match Maurice A. Ferre Park. I believe some reporting from Miami Herald said that that's a county pump station.
There we go. Joe Carollo is just the Miami controversy gift that keeps on giving. I also just want to quickly mention before we leave Monroe County's primary ballot, a primary election note there. It involves the race for, of note, I should say, it revolves the race for Republican candidate for county supervisor of elections between Margaret Romero and Sherry Hodes. And fortunately, as much as I would like to keep talking with you guys about Miami-Dade County, we'll have to leave it there. WLRN government accountability reporter Joshua Ceballos watches Miami, the magic city, for us. Mm-hmm. Veronica Zaragovia covers Miami Beach for WLRN. Danny Rivero covers Miami-Dade County for WLRN. Many thanks to you all and happy voting.
Thank you,
Tim.
On today's show, our WLRN reporters are helping us preview Tuesday's primary elections here in South Florida. We just hashed out what's on the ballot in Miami-Dade County, so now we'll pivot north to Broward County, where we've also got some important races to consider, not the least of which is another sheriff's race, this one featuring incumbent and controversial Broward County Sheriff Gregory Toney, who's facing no fewer than three challengers in the Democratic primary. Five of the nine Broward County Public School Board seats are also up for grabs, including some held by board members conservative Florida Governor Ron DeSantis appointed amidst the district's recent raft of scandals. And if you don't think school board elections matter, then you didn't see this week's scenes of long lines of Broward High School students waiting to go through their new metal detectors to get to class. What are some Broward primary contests and questions you think we should know about? Call us at 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. Joining me now in the studio is WLRN's new Broward County reporter, Carlton Gillespie. Carlton, congratulations and thanks for coming in. How are you?
I'm great, Tim. Happy to be back.
So the last time I spoke with you on the program, we talked about cricket, if I recall.
Yep.
Cricket has a lot of rules. South Florida politics, not so much, right? Which brings me to a new controversy involving Broward County's already controversial incumbent sheriff, Gregory Toney, a Democrat. And it involves Democratic presidential candidate, Vice President Kamala Harris. Can you explain what's going on with Sheriff Toney and his campaign in this regard?
Yeah, so recently campaign mailers made their way into, you know, mailboxes all over the county showing Gregory Toney standing next to Vice President Kamala Harris.
Right.
This is a real picture. People thought that this may have been Photoshopped. This is a real picture the two took together.
Right. In the AI age, we need to confirm that.
Yeah. Okay. Back in March when she visited Stoneman Douglas, it also has a quote from Barack Obama that says, "We are the change we seek." So a very unsubtle play towards a very heavily Democratic county. And it came out very quickly after she was announced as the new presidential nominee.
Right. But despite those pictures, we need to point out that Gregory Toney has not been formally endorsed by either Kamala Harris or Barack Obama.
That's right. And the mailer just has a photo of them together. It does not, I should say conspicuously so, does not indicate that she is endorsing him in any way.
Okay. All right. Glad we cleared that up.
In fact, actually, the mailer was paid for by an America First or a Broward First PAC that is a conservative PAC.
Really?
Yes, that's mostly a conservative PAC that is funded or that has supported, you know, DeSantis. And of course, DeSantis himself in a CNN town hall a few months ago called Gregory Tony, you know, one of the good ones as one of the Democrats that he likes to work with. So an interesting strategy in a very blue county.
Right, right. Very South Florida. But let's look at the Democratic primary for Broward County Sheriff. Gregory Tony seems to have real competition, right? So tell us about the challengers.
He does. So, you know, maybe the most prominent challenger is Steve Geller, not to be confused with current County Commissioner Steve Geller. This is right. Stephen Andrew Geller, Steve A. Geller. Mm-hmm. He served 30 years in the Plantation Police Force and also with FDLE. He's resigned or temporarily stepped back from his FDLE role to run. You know, he got the Sun Sentinel's endorsement, which was a major shot across the bow to the Tony campaign. There's also David Howard and Alvin Pollack who are also running. But really, they're all going to have to overcome a significant, not just incumbency bias, but a funding challenge. Tony has raised, you know, $50,000 more than his nearest competitor. So that's going to be something significant that they have to overcome. But Tony's strategy has been not to do a whole lot of media. There's been a ton of social media fanfare. Yep. Shaquille O'Neal was at his new training facility just the other day to post a video. Hmm. Obviously, the flyer with Harris is kind of a signal to that. So it's been interesting.
But let's talk here about why Gregory Tony looks vulnerable in the first place right now in his bid for re-election as Broward County Sheriff. He has been at the center of controversy, if not scandal, since Florida Governor Ron DeSantis appointed him about, what, 6 years ago?
In 2019.
2019, 5 years ago. What are the big issues dogging him as we head to next Tuesday's primary?
So the largest, of course, is this FDLE investigation in 2022 that claims that Tony failed to report a killing that took place when he was still living in Philadelphia when he was 14.
Right.
He omitted this information on his application to join the police force and lied on multiple occasions about having a suspended license and about his drug use in the past. He applied initially to be a police officer in Tallahassee and indicated that he had taken LSD before and was rejected, and on subsequent police applications answered no right. to questions and similar questions.
There are also the Broward County Corrections Department issues, the spate of prisoner suicides that we've seen in the last couple of years, right?
And pregnant women who have given birth in jail. In addition to those scandals, really the issue recently has been money. That center that I mentioned, the new police training facility, was significantly over budget. You know, $10 million a recent audit found. And there's also kind of a concerning, I mean, I guess you could call it imaging that he is doing. There is a full wall mural of him mm-hmm. inside the firing range in there. He is branded amongst all of this stuff, you know, shower curtains, seat cushions, all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And this is in a county where 54 cents of every tax dollar go to the Broward Sheriff's Office. And right. on top of that, a few months ago, he submitted his new budget that's another 48% increase on top of that. So not spending money wisely and asking for $1.5 billion to fund this department are really what's giving him the negative press.
And so all that's hanging over the Tuesday primary. But we should mention the Tuesday primary is essentially the ball game for Broward Sheriff, right? No Republicans have thrown their hats into the ring, and the independent candidate who will face Tuesday's winner in the November general election does not look like a strong contender.
No, Charles Whatley is the independent, and it is you know, largely said that whoever wins this primary on Tuesday will be the new sheriff.
As I said, this is the ball game.
Yep.
This is the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tim Padgett. I'm talking with WLRN Broward County reporter Carlton Gillespie about next Tuesday's primary election, with a spotlight on incumbent Broward Sheriff Gregory Tony and a host of critical school board seats. Call us at 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. Carlton, let's look at those Broward school board races. As I mentioned, 5 of the 9 seats are being contested in this nonpartisan election on Tuesday. And one of the things that makes this interesting is that this will be the first time Broward voters get to weigh in or scrutinize the board members Governor DeSantis appointed to replace past board members who were involved in a spate of scandals that plagued the Broward public school system in years past. What are some of the races here that we should be watching?
So those two that you mentioned, the two incumbents who are the DeSantis appointees, District 1's Dan Fognoli and District 2 Tori Alston, mm-hmm. both have serious, serious challengers in Fognoli's part, because the district that he represents is Hollywood and some of Dania Beach, and Fognoli currently lives in Coral Springs. He's said that he's going to move into the district, but as of now, he still resides in Coral Springs. His challenger, Maura Bulman, has outraised him, you know, 63,000 to 9,000. She's actually crushed him in fundraising.
Wow.
She's gotten, you know, major endorsements from the Broward Teachers Union, Democratic Voting League, Black Caucus, a number of big organizations. So he's in real trouble.
But is this sort of a referendum, as you were kind of mentioning to me earlier, a referendum on these DeSantis appointees in terms of that agenda that went along with their appointments, you know, more parental rights, things of that nature?
Yeah, school choice, private school scholarships. So mm-hmm. all of that is on the ballot in each of these five. There is a slate of candidates, whether it's the two incumbents or three challengers in the other seats, who have all been endorsed by another school board member, Brenda Pham, you know, with language like, "These are the five candidates who will stop schools from secret transitioning your child, or who will give you the appropriate course." That culture war issue that has dominated the education talk in this state for what seems like years now is absolutely on the ballot. There could be five who support these kind of culture war initiatives or five who oppose it. And, you know, we could get a clean sweep either way that would end up as a majority on the school board.
Yeah. No, that's interesting, because I remember last week on our show, South Florida Sun Sentinel education reporter Scott Travis said that while the culture wars issue in education in Florida may be dying down in the rest of the state, it's still very much alive in Broward County.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It happens at every single school board meeting, even, you know, the most recent school board meeting where they discussed firing the mom of the transgender athlete at Monarch High School. Mm-hmm. You know, there is a school board member that's misgendering the child. There's members of the public who are misgendering the child and speaking in, you know, in very extreme terms about these kinds of issues. So, yeah, it is alive and well, especially on this school board.
So very much hanging over these school board races on Tuesday. Now, another Broward school board race of note is the one featuring incumbent Deborah Hixon, whose husband Christopher was killed in the 2018 Parkland school shooting. She was originally elected on a reform wave, particularly when it comes to guns and school safety. Her challenger next Tuesday, Tom Vasquez, seems to have a different agenda. No, can you tell us more about him and this contest?
Yeah, I mean, Vasquez is similarly, he's part of this block, right, that represents kind of the opposite of the school board. He supports school choice. He supports, you know, a lot of his conversations, though, are about his leadership. He's a former Marine. He served in school boards in North Carolina, military bases. And there's not a whole lot of substance outside of that. Every issue, whether it's closing Broward County schools, he supports it and understands why it's happening. Or the payout to charter schools, he understands why it's happening, but thinks that stronger leadership will prevent this in the future. It seems to be kind of his bellwether is leaning on this leadership.
Also
issue.
Seems to be a distinction, you know, whereas people like Deborah Hixon say, you know, we've got to be focusing more on things like gun control in order to make our schools safer. He seems to be, you know, as an ex-Marine, seems to be saying, no, this is about student discipline and things of that nature.
Yeah, that's right. A big cornerstone of his mythos is that he was a bad student for, you know, his entire education until one teacher set him straight on the path, and now he's a decorated Marine and worked in the Pentagon. So he's very much a believer in that kind of, you know, we can fix this at a student by student level rather than overarching reforms like Ms. Hixon.
So finally, Carlton, if Vasquez were to win, what do you think that would tell us about how the political environment in Broward County has shifted now, 6 years after the Parkland tragedy?
Yeah, and after that tragedy, there was a large, there was a few folks who kind of came to prominence. Deborah Hixon is one, obviously Christine Hunchowski, who was the mayor of Parkland at the time, now a state representative. I mean, I think it would show that kind of the culture war has won in Broward schools. If it's Vasquez and if it's, you know, the other candidates that and the two incumbents that are elected, it really kind of paints a picture that the culture war talking issues that are popular enough to win the school board and could dictate, you know, policy for the next 4 years.
Right. At a moment when the school board, the school district in Broward County seems to be finally getting back on its feet.
They have a superintendent who he's the sixth in 3 years, and he claims he's going to be the last one for a long time.
Right. Still needs to fix those long lines at the metal detectors, though, right?
Yeah, they actually, due to inclement weather today, have suspended them at some of the schools, the metal detectors. So still a work in progress.
Thanks for that note. Carlton Gillespie is WLRN's new Broward County reporter, and you recently got engaged, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Congratulations on both counts, sir. Happy voting, and many thanks.
Thanks, Tim.
On today's show, our WLRN reporters are helping us preview Tuesday's primary elections here in South Florida. We've so far explored what's on the ballot in Miami-Dade and Broward counties, so we're ready to pivot north again and dive into Palm Beach County, which is great because that means we get to bring in WLRN's always engaging and erudite Palm Beach County reporter Wilkin Brutus. Wilkin, how are you?
Erudite. Oh, yeah, I love it. Hey, Tim.
I'm not feeling so erudite, which is another reason why I'm glad to have you on. And to our listeners, what are the Palm Beach County primary election contests and questions you'd like to hear about? Call us at 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. Wilkin, let's start with what you advised me is a pretty interesting Democratic primary election for Palm Beach's District 7 County Commission seat. And this is fairly momentous because the winner would replace the county's first Haitian American commissioner, Mac Bernard, correct?
Correct, yeah, absolutely.
So tell us about this race and the two candidates you say are both fairly popular.
Yeah, again, to Mac Bernard, he was the only Haitian on a county commission. So former state senator Bobby Powell Jr. is running against former West Palm Beach city commissioner and practicing attorney Richard Riles to be the Democratic nominee. And these are black male candidates who are competing to replace Commissioner Mac Bernard, who is term limited after serving 8 years. And right. So all three of these men are quite well known in the local political circle. As for the race, Bobby Powell Jr. has, I would say, deeper endorsements from the Democratic establishment. And Richard Riles is seen here as the underdog who has raised concerns about the Democratic Party's leadership in the past as it pertains to issues in the black community.
And what is so important, not just about this race, but about the District 7 in Palm Beach County here? Why is this particularly significant?
It's a significant district. It includes a large minority population, Delray Beach, Riviera Beach, or some of the cities. Boynton Beach is another city within a district. Mm-hmm. And it's a huge minority population. And so I've actually attended
And a big immigrant population
as well. Oh, massive immigrant. Yeah.
Particularly places like Riviera Beach. Yeah.
Exactly. Minority in terms of not just black folks. I know that can be a catch-all phrase to some extent, but minority in terms of the cross-culture communities, multi-ethnic communities. Mm-hmm. And so the platform, there is some overlap here. The platform is considered to focus on affordable housing, right? Cost of living, better transportation. And we certainly have a homelessness crisis. You know, the numbers have, I think it was 15% this time around. From last year. And so we're seeing the same sort of overlapping concerns from both of these candidates. But I think Richard Riles is facing, well, I would say Bobby Powell has raised $100,000 more than Richard Riles here. So he does seem to have more institutional support.
Well, amidst these issues, what is the legacy that Mac Bernard, particularly as the first Haitian American commissioner, what's the legacy that Bernard is leaving on the Palm Beach County Commission in terms of those issues that you were just discussing?
Yeah, policy, absolutely. He wasn't considered as like a community activist. He was definitely one of those guys who was considered an elected official who believed in the legislative process, Tim. So Bernard has always been viewed as a guy who focused solely on, well, I wouldn't say solely, but on affordable housing. That was like his main bread and butter. He was a major proponent of the county's $200 million housing bond. And most notably voted against the development of the county's agricultural reserve. So housing, prior to the interest rates ballooning up to crazy interest rates, he has been sort of this housing advocate since day one. And I think that what his legacy is showing now.
Where will Mac Bernard be heading now?
So Mac Bernard is actually succeeding Powell Jr.'s state Senate seat. Okay. Powell gave up the remaining 2 years of his term to run for the Palm Beach County seat, and no one else actually filed to run against Bernard for that vacant Senate seat.
Right.
And so
okay.
Bernard, in the past, actually served on the House. But yeah, he'll be replacing Bobby Powell.
Okay, so but he'll still be on the scene. Speaking of Bernard,
yep.
though, Wilkin, how important has the booming Haitian-American community become in the politics of Palm Beach County?
It's been huge because it's not so much about, okay, there's a Haitian-American on a commission seat for representation purposes. Mm-hmm. It's all about legislative. What can you do to advance the causes that folks are caring about? I mean, we saw this many years ago during the national campaign when Trump came to Miami, for example, and people figured out that there was a huge demographic of Haitians who were voting for Trump instead of Clinton.
Right, I remember that, yeah.
Right. A lot of people was not really addressing their concerns. So it was like an advocate type of vote, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Bernard did a great job of tapping into that sentiment. What are you going to do for me versus you just winning an election on identity sort of reasons alone?
Yeah, no. And that and I know that's very important down south here in communities like Little Haiti. They felt the same way. I remember the pictures of Trump posing with mm-hmm. Haitian American community leaders in Little Haiti that sort of, you know, ruffled a lot of feathers at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And it ruffled feathers here in Palm Beach County when you consider that in the past, most Haitians were disgruntled with the Clintons, especially in terms of foreign policy that impacted
right.
Haiti's rice industry and so forth. We can yeah. go on all day
post,
about that.
Post-earthquake. Recovery, yeah.
2010
exactly.
earthquake.
Right.
And so some of these sentiments have carried on. And so I think Mac Bernard, to his credit, has done a great job at like pushing policies first mm-hmm. versus saying, hey, I'm Haitian, you should vote for me.
Right.
And I think that has given him a lot of success locally.
Now, early in the show, Wilkin, we were talking about the compelling sheriff races in Miami-Dade and Broward counties. Things look a little, shall we say, less suspenseful in the Palm Beach County sheriff's race. No, I mean, just briefly, who is the longtime incumbent sheriff up there and why is he likely to slide into re-election again?
Yeah, that's a great way to put it, sliding to the first base, right? like Danny Rivero said in a previous segment, it's hard to run against an incumbent despite the overwhelming amount of law enforcement experience in this race, I might add. It's going to be really difficult to unseat 76-year-old Rick Bradshaw,
yeah.
who is the longest-serving sheriff in Palm Beach County's history. 20 years. He's currently in his fifth term. And so...
Right.
In terms of policies, after years of refusing to, Bradshaw in 2022 finally allowed his deputies to carry Narcan, the brand name for naloxone, which helps
right.
people overdosing on opioid. I did a massive feature story on that.
Mm-hmm.
But candidates are essentially questioning his office over the ever-increasing size of the department's budget
uh-huh.
and what they deem as lack of transparency, since the sheriff's office can move things around in the budget items, move them around without the advance approval of the county's commission.
Right.
And so that's what Republican candidates are going to fight against, and that's what his Democratic primary
okay.
opponent,
right.
Alex Freeman, is going to raise.
But nonetheless, Bradshaw looks pretty safe.
Yeah,
he
has raised a massive $800,000 compared to Alex
okay.
Freeman's $53,000.
That's good to know. This is the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tim Padgett. I'm talking with WLRN's Palm Beach County reporter, Wilkin Brutus, about next Tuesday's primary election, including the race to replace Palm Beach County's first Haitian-American commissioner, Mac Bernard. Call us at 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. Wilkin, let's turn to an important question voters will answer on the Palm Beach County ballot on Tuesday, and that's the issue of whether to extend a 30-year-old property tax exemption program that attracts, through performance-based qualifications, large companies with high-paying jobs and new facilities. Given all the economic development debates and disputes that have arisen in fast-growing Palm Beach County in recent years, Tell us about why this has emerged as one of the key concerns for voters there next week.
Yeah, it's I wouldn't say it's one of the key concerns. I would say it's definitely a little known sort of policy. Every 10 years, according to state law, Palm Beach County is required to ask voters whether to extend this tax abatement program.
That's good context. Thanks. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It helps attract. Nonetheless, it's extremely important, and it's one reason why I produced that article about it. It helps attract large companies to our county, property tax incentives and other tax incentives. And mind you, this isn't your mom and pop businesses, though. The incentives are only available for a select group of firms and projects, typically corporate headquarters and your manufacturing firms, who must pay an average salary of at least $72,000 a year. Mm-hmm. And capital investments from interested companies are in the millions. And so this isn't business and, you know, tax incentives for your small businesses. And if it's not renewed, the program would sunset by August 31st.
Now, I know you recently spoke with Kelly Smallridge, who is the president of Palm Beach County's Business Development Board. What do officials up there say about this ballot question? What's their, you know, feeling about how voters should go on this?
Sure. Smallridge told me the board meets with these companies, these interested companies, to entice them to stay in Florida over main competitors like states including North Carolina, South Carolina, Texas, Tennessee. And so it's a performance-based program. And so it's extremely important because it brings money to the county. She said county and state incentives to these companies totaled nearly $36 million. But the five-year economic impact to the county totaled $5.7 billion.
Wow.
So we're talking about in the billions here.
Yeah. Oh, that is, well, still, I mean, even if we're just dealing with, you know, something that has to be put on the ballot, it's still that's still a very important consideration. Yeah, no doubt about it.
Oh, absolutely.
It. Yeah.
And voters should definitely consider that. For example, one major company, Finfrock, we did a story on them several years ago. They brought their manufacturing company to Belgrade in 2019, and they invested some $36 million to do that. Mm-hmm. And brought in $272 million in economic impact.
Right.
And so anyone who lives in Palm Beach County knows that Belgrade have always suffered from the lack of jobs and economic opportunity. So you're seeing some benefits to that.
Now, finally, Wilkin, this being South Florida, there is, of course, a bit of scandal now on the Palm Beach County primary ballot for next week. It may come as a surprise to some that Palm Beach port commissioners are elected, but they are. And one of those port commissioners up for re-election on Tuesday in Group 2 is Verissa Das, a Democrat. Last month, she apparently texted one of the port tenants, a construction contractor, telling him that since she's the incumbent, he needed to contribute more to her campaign than he was giving to her opponent. The contractor shared that text with Stet News in Palm Beach County, and here's part of what Das says in that text. Quote, "You need to give me triple what you gave my opponent," and I should note the word triple is in all caps. Wilkin, why would an elected official even think of texting something like this, exposing themselves that way?
Yeah, it's mind-boggling. This is Games of Thrones, Florida edition, you know, in an election year. I mean, you would think every candidate would do everything that they can to avoid ethical issues. So Verissa Das is an incumbent in the 5-member board of commissioners at the Port of Palm Beach, and she was appointed in December 2022. So according to reporting from Stat News, and they did a really good job with this, it included these direct text messages, and Verissa apparently had a personal friendship with a tenant, and she was upset that he donated the same amount of campaign funds to her two opponents in that Group 2 race. And so, you know, calling his actions disrespectful and arguing that he should have given up, you know, triple of what, you know. And so for her, it was just a lack of support. But I don't think she realized that you just can't do that during a race.
Wilkin Brutus is WLRN's Palm Beach County reporter. Wilkin, happy voting and many thanks.
Thank you, Tim.
Finally on the roundup, if we haven't adequately made the point yet on today's show, I'll say it again. Get out and vote. You only need to look at what's happening in Venezuela right now to remember how precious this democratic right of ours is. So here are some key voting reminders for you. Early voting ends on Sunday, August 18th. In Monroe County, it ends tomorrow. And our primary election day is next Tuesday, August 20th. In order to vote, you will need a current and valid photo ID with a signature. It can be your driver's license, ID card, U.S. passport, military ID, or student ID. To learn more about how to vote, from voting locations to what to bring on election day, visit WLRN.org/voting. To learn more about your local, state, and federal candidates, review our voter guide at WLRN.org/vote2024. And let me say it again, get out and vote. That will do it for the South Florida Roundup. It's produced by Jimena Romero with help from Polly Landis. Katie Munoz is our director of original live programming. Mateo Sanchez is digital editor. Sergio Bustos is WLRN's vice president of news. The vice president of radio and the show's technical supervisor is Peter J. Mertz. Richard Ives answers the phones. I'm Tim Padgett. Have a great weekend and thanks for listening. Gracias. Merci. Obrigado.
WLRN.